We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
Majority of folks in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Anthony Herron Live is brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. If he were on the phone, I would tell you he was joining me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline out in Melrose Park, where you can find 500 new and used vehicles. But he's actually joining me here in studio, place he was last night, because he hosts a post-game show. So he does his TV show across the street. Olin does his TV show down the street. Then they meet up, they compare notes, and they talk football for like an hour, like they did yesterday. Hello, Big Ant Herron.
Hello, Loho. This was it was an interesting one to break down and discuss afterwards. And I think it's going to be, and already has been, kind of an interesting balance for Matt Nagy to walk, because the standard is the standard, as he and his players like to say. And, you know, I know there was an expectation coming into the season of what we all thought this team would look like and should look like. And, you know, it's nice to get a win. It's good to get a win. I had zero problem with them having club dub afterwards, because it's hard to win in this league. But that still wasn't quite up to the standard. It, you know, probably exceeded the standard that they've shown this season, but didn't meet the standard yet of where folks thought this squad would be.
How would you, because I've been asking if this is a satisfying win, how would you characterize the win?
A necessary win. It was not satisfying. It was, but they needed it. They had to have it. They got it against that squad. And there were several games on the schedule this season, multiple games that haven't gone their way that they've lost. The ones that stick out to me most are the Raiders game, the Chargers game. You know, because going into the game against the Saints, I'm like, well, all right, they're not playing ball at the level that's going to defeat New Orleans right now. New Orleans was playing like the best team in the league at that point, so I didn't think they were going to beat the Saints, but there's games that are going to come back to bite them later on in the season. The Raiders games and Chargers games are two of those. This game was one that they needed to have it. Detroit was not only the bottom of the division, but also banged up and beat up, and having then their backup quarterback starting against the Bears. So it's one you got to win. And they didn't play great throughout to get it, but they got it. And they came out a little more banged up overall. So it was necessary. That was, we do a word of the day on our post game show, and I think necessary was the word I ended up using at the end of the show. That's sort of how I would phrase it. They needed to get it, and they got it, but it certainly wasn't pretty.
What did you think of how the offense played? Because obviously you have Mitchell with what, 173, three touchdowns, high passer rating above 130, didn't throw any interceptions, was really good against man coverage yesterday, but it still seemed clunky. Why is it still clunky?
I mean, one thing I was talking about last night was the Bears lead the NFL in drops. You know, it doesn't mean every time he throws a pass to somebody, they're batting the ball down like a volleyball player. No, but it doesn't help when early in the game, we look at the last couple of times the Bears have gone out and not started well. And it's been the majority of this season, obviously, and really second half of last year, where they haven't started well. They haven't started hot on offense and had to sort of grind their gears into better offensive performances throughout a game. And that's certainly been the case for the majority of this year. A lot of times they haven't gotten any offense going, but when they have, it hasn't been from the start. And you look at just the last 2 weeks in a vacuum, and you got Tariq Cohen dropping balls early in the game last week. You got Taylor Gabriel dropping balls early in the game yesterday. And those are things that, you know, it's going to go as an incompletion for Mitch, and it's not going to matter whether or not the offensive line held up well in pass protection on those snaps or anything like that. But drops are a problem, blown protections are a problem, and the calculus of who gets moved around, who comes in, who goes out, the center position is one where at least you still get to keep your best five on the field on the offensive line. You flop Whitehair and Daniels, and the calculus of what negative effect that could have on just kind of the mojo of the squad that's searching for mojo right now. I think they felt like, you know what, James Daniels is a young kid who can handle this. Cody Whitehair is going to make Mitch more comfortable. It should improve some of the difficulty they've had throughout the season in just IDing where pressure is going to come from. And that seemed, you know, frequently enough to be improved yesterday, but you do lose some things with that. You know, there's snap issues that happen in the game.
A lot.
That are likely to continue to happen, you know, because that's been Cody Whitehair at center. So, you know, if that doesn't get corrected, then you put your quarterback in a little bit more of a bind, but then you do have the pre-snap phase where he's helped out and more comfortable in that manner. And with some of the comments Mitch made afterwards, it seems that he certainly places a higher value on that than he does in having to handle errant snaps. So it seemed like a move that they felt good about making. I don't think that necessarily Whitehair or Daniels looked overly comfortable with their first game out getting back to the positions they played last year.
Let me flip over to defense, and Big Ann Heron is here joining me, as he often does. On Mondays, he comes to visit us in studio, which is great. I want to talk about Kwiatkowski for a second. Mm. I think that he's a extremely valuable backup, but I've been trying to figure out exactly how far that value extends. If I'm looking at a player that would start and be good someplace else, or is perfectly cast in the role that he has now, where it's your extra linebacker, great on special teams. If you need him to get you out of a game, he's fantastic. But if he's starting a game and you have a chance to game plan against him, will he be as effective?
And for one, that's the dilemma the Bears will probably be in by the end of this season, because it's a scenario that's playing out now that will be very intriguing to follow, because you'll have Danny Trevathan, who it would appear will be going into the offseason still injured, and for him in a contract year, and also now his backup in a contract year, Kwiatkowski will likely continue to play well. Will he make some of the splash plays he made yesterday on a weekly basis? Probably not. But we've seen even early in his career, he can go in there, he can be kind of a tackling machine, he can still be effective on special teams while doing that and being a starting linebacker and playing next to Roquan Smith. I think you could potentially be looking at the starting inside linebacker for the coming years for the Bears. But Danny Trevathan being injured, you know, perhaps as he was in the midst of a quality season, maybe because he's banged up and he's getting a little bit older, maybe his price tag comes down. I mean, I think that's part of what Ryan Pace is going to be trying to figure out here, because with Kwiatkowski and Smith, you've got both guys right now under their rookie deal, and Kwiatkowski certainly isn't going to, you know, require a high price tag if you're going to keep him around. And maybe that's something where you're able to keep the cap in a friendly sort of tenor for the moment, while you try to figure out who and, you know, how you're going to pay, you know, some other guys who may be looking to get paid here. But can you get by with him as you're starting inside linebacker? Yeah, you definitely can. He's not Trevathan or Smith when Roquan is at his best, but he's certainly you can get by with him. You can play winning football with Nick Kwiatkowski.
What are his limitations?
Well, against a mobile quarterback, I was impressed with his ability one-on-one to be a spy versus Driscoll yesterday. That was something where his lateral quickness, his straight line speed, even when he was coming out of the combine, and I don't remember what his 40-yard time was or anything, but his straight line speed has never been an issue that has bothered me. But there's been times where, and we saw it, the season before last, where he got more extensive playing time, where he can get exposed in pass coverage, where folks are going to route him up with running backs or match him up on tight ends at different points. And that's not something that the Lions were really in a position to try to take advantage of yesterday, just because of how their offense functions, especially with Jeff Driscoll at QB as opposed to Matthew Stafford. But you can, we've seen at times, expose him in pass coverage. But he made a great play in zone coverage, you know, eyes on the quarterback, made a great read against a young QB, made a nice interception there, and some of the one-on-one tackles in space against a mobile quarterback. I mean, we always got to remember, and it's easy to forget, that where a guy was early in his career is not always where he'll finish up. So even where the lateral quickness of Nick Kwiatkowski isn't what it is for the Bears' two normal starting linebackers in Smith and Trevathan, but we saw him making plays where, whether it's just improving at his anticipation or the angles that he pursues in, he did a better job of those plays in space, both in coverage and in tackling guys one-on-one. Now, he wasn't one-on-one in space against a running back or a receiver, but against a mobile quarterback, those things matter to be able to take down a big and capable runner like Jeff Driskel.
My worry is that Sean McVay is like, ah, I got something for you,
yeah.
And it's called the slot receiver,
right.
And it's Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
Enjoy some of this, or maybe then the volley back is, all right, fine. Then what we'll do is we'll go to nickel or we'll go to dime. And then you can have fun with that. And then McVay goes, well, here's Todd Gurley. Enjoy. Like that. I wonder if that chess match is going to play out if Kwiatkowski is in there playing this weekend for Trevathan, which I expect him to be.
Right. And I'm sure it will. And, you know, I don't even know that Kwiatkowski is a guy they're going to devote too much time towards game planning for yet, just because I'm not sure they'll even have some certainty about how the Bears will deploy him. So even if it's not going in with a true game plan ever, but as it plays out throughout the game, then it's likely that the Rams could end up seeing that, focusing on it, and deciding how to feature certain individuals against him. I'd be surprised if they go into the game thinking, you know what? All right, there's that 44 guy. Let's really game plan around attacking him. But even if they don't, then it's something that could still come up throughout the game itself where they figure out how do they attack that guy because he's on the field and they feel like they've got an advantage in that area of the Bears defense.
What does it mean when a quarterback does make throws and good throws against man coverage?
It means that he's, you know, by comparison to, you know, to sort of enhance your question, by comparison to what he does against zone is what we're indicating there. And that's been the scouting report on Mitch for a couple of years now, just in, you know, just guys I talked to around the league since his rookie year has been, all right, let's just zone this guy up and see how he does. I was surprised at the amount of man coverage the Lions played.
Me too.
Yesterday. They've had plenty of film on Mitch. They played him twice a season for a couple of years now. And they're just kind of in the we do what we do mode, and Mitch carved him up for it. You know, that's where some of those talents where he was a high draft pick and some of the talents that have led to some of the bigger games he's had since he's been a Bears quarterback, those show in those situations where he can comfortably diagnose what the coverage is, where his matchup is, what's the advantage from one player against the next, like on the Ben Broniker touchdown, where even on that one, he, you know, probably hitched it one more kind of millimoment than he probably needed to throw it with some more anticipation, but he had time to do it, so it didn't matter. And it's the Detroit Lions, so he threw a beautiful pass, and Broniker made a great catch, and it's the first touchdown for the Bears in that game. The fourth and one was a moment. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that, because I was talking about that with Olin a lot last night, too, where just from a strictly kind of a game management standpoint, super risky. You could, you know, it worked, so we can use the term gutsy to go for it. And, you know, he talked about it afterwards, where it was something he wanted to do to spark his guys. Oh, me and Jim Miller were looking at each other in the moment like, whoa, he's about to do this, and he did it. They converted.
Especially considering how terrified he was in a late game situation a couple of weeks ago of all the things that might go wrong. And This is one of the things that could go wrong, and you're in your own territory.
Yeah,
you're
and you could 29. Be giving
away points.
Yeah,
I find Matt Nagy to be wildly inconsistent. That's what I think about it.
Right. To do it,
but you got to do
it. Second quarter.
This is one of those things where I get mad at him because the numbers say, go for it all the time on fourth and one. And to have,
but your own 29 is a different thing, though. Your own 29 is a different thing.
Football, like long-time thoughts on football is don't go for it in your own territory. But the math still says fourth and one, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. But you can't be that guy. You can't be Maverick, we need a little something-something. And then when you need a couple extra yards for your kicker, which is a whole nother issue that we should talk about, then you don't want to get him closer no matter what the numbers say. It's a little bit distressing. But, yeah, I didn't like some of the calls he made in third and short where you're sitting there going – you've got David Montgomery. Like, what more does that guy have to do to show you he breaks tackles and he falls forward?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he hasn't – when you look at Montgomery's numbers statistically, they're not very good because that offensive line hasn't been great. But when you talk about yards after contact, that guy is producing yards after contact.
Statistically, the Bears' run game last season was hands down better than the Bears' run game this season. But when you look at plays being made in the backfield – they're exponentially better this year. David Montgomery does not get caught in the backfield. He gets hit in the backfield, but he doesn't stay there. He continues that leg drive, that pad level, and he eventually advances himself to or beyond the line of scrimmage. That's just who he is as a ball carrier. It's who he was in college. It's who, as a rookie, he's proven himself to be in the National Football League. But before I forget, because you referenced the game against Philly, where you know you had the opportunity to gain a couple more yards for your kicker.
The Chargers.
The Chargers, excuse me. One thing that came up in the playoff game against the Eagles that I thought someone was going to connect the dots at some point about it, because in the playoff game where he had an opportunity to perhaps do the same thing, let's just take a knee, we're in field goal range, he did actually. You remember where he allowed Mitch to drop back, you know, quick pass, but through kind of a deep sort of seam route down the middle to Anthony Miller to at least look at it.
And Miller was open on that play.
Miller was open. Mitch, you know, sort of cautiously just threw it out the back of the end zone because it's in his head, like, I don't want to screw this up and make a mistake. So he threw it out the back of the end zone. Then Cody Parkey comes on the field to attempt the field goal. That, to me, was sort of the automatic juxtaposition of a playoff game where Matt Nagy had a very similar scenario come up, and he decided to handle that differently. And then essentially a few months later, here he is in a regular season game, and he decided, you know what? We're not going to do it that way. We're gonna take a knee. We're going to get our kicker on the field since we're in range. That's one where I was surprised that someone within kind of the media scrum, well, hey, remember that playoff game where you did it differently? Doesn't mean he can't change his philosophy on it, but I would have been curious to hear him out on why it was that way in the playoff game and not that way during this regular season game. And all these things have different factors to them. How much do you, you know, trust the kicker there? You got the young guy here, and where's your wind and all that other stuff. But I would have been very, very intrigued to hear him juxtapose the playoff game versus what happened against the Chargers.
I want to know why the Rams are struggling. What have you seen from them? And is this a team that, I don't think yesterday's effort gets them a win against the Rams, but is this a team that with a good effort the Bears can beat?
Oh, they can get got. Yes, they can definitely get got. The Rams, in a similar fashion to the Chargers and the Eagles, when the Bears face them, are, you know, it's that Spider-Man meme kind of thing where the Bears and this coming opponent feel very similarly internally. Like the Rams and all the, I'm out west a lot. I've called several games in LA. I'm talking to LA media about the Rams and, of course, the LA college teams and USC and UCLA. They feel really similarly about their squad to how the discussions are going that we're having about the Bears right now. Difference is they've paid Jared Goff a bunch of money. He is currently their quarterback and going to be their quarterback for a long time, but they've got their Wunderkind head coach who it seems like folks have figured him out. What's going on with this offense? We're not sure if this quarterback's any good and is he done developing. Now we got a banged up running back and their offensive line is in shambles right now. So, I mean, you know, even without Akeem Hicks, we're seeing Nick Williams do some great things with penetration. I think it's a matchup where Roy Robertson-Harris should feel better in this game as opposed to a rushing attack that's going to come out and hit him in the nose, and his pad level has been exposed several times. He's just a really long, angular guy who came up playing on the edge as a linebacker and then gets to some end and now playing inside as a defensive tackle for the most part. I mean, he's on the interior of the line with his three technique, some heavy five, and certainly, you know, when they move him inside more as a two technique, that's tough business down there. And he's been exposed with that at times, but I think this Rams matchup should favor him as well, where there are going to be some things where he's able to just be matched up in more finesse scenarios, more passing, more, you know, predictive passing downs and distances, because they haven't been consistently willing and able to run the ball with the Rams offense and haven't really sustained drives in the manner that we've seen them do in the previous seasons under Sean McVay. So I think even without Akeem Hicks, the Bears defensive front should go into this one feeling pretty good, because the Rams line was already beat up going into last week's game. Then they had a couple of more guys get banged up too. So I'm not even sure who's going to be on the field for them when they face each other on Sunday Night Football.
That is Anthony Herron. You can hear him here on The Score as an expert throughout the week. You can watch him on Fox 32. He does a great job over there. He works for the Pac-12 Network, but he's actually got the weekend off, so he gets to hang out with his little boy and his wife and have a good time just watching football. When he's not doing all of that, he also hosts a radio show with our buddy Jason Goff on SiriusXM, channel 372, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Every morning. You guys talk about Lovey today?
You know what? Goff had the morning off, so this morning it was me and John Jansen. But yeah, showed a lot of love to Lovey. And you know what? I got to do it tomorrow. I was going to call out our guy Herb Lawrence by name, because Herb was all over Twitter when Illinois wasn't beating Nebraska earlier in the season.
Eastern Michigan.
Calling for Lovey's job and all kind of stuff. And I know Herb loves his Illini. Now they're bowl eligible. Herb, You better get back on that. Well, I know he's back on it,
but I don't think he's allowing himself to watch the games, right? Because
really?
Because I don't think that he watched the Wisconsin game, and Herbie's like crazy, like he's one of those. Like, if the remote is in his left hand and the team scores,
he's one of those.
So, can't let his fan points per game go up.
Right. So I don't think he's allowing himself to watch this.
It's going pretty well. I guess he shouldn't tune in.
But he did say that he's going to the bowl game, wherever it is.
Well, you know what? It won't matter when they lose the bowl game then. So if Herbie's there and they lose the bowl game, then at least he can take credit for it, take blame for it, but it won't make a difference because it's a bowl game.
He's really hoping that it's the San Diego Credit Union bowl game.
Then he can just have all kind of love coming from all angles, his old stomping grounds.
He can go kick it. You know what? It's actually not a terrible – like if they go, I might go. I'm not even a fan. I got other problems. I got all sorts of other problems down in Tuscaloosa, Big Ant Heron, let me tell you. You can follow Anthony on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. We need to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about the offense, and I got some stuff from my guys on the Football After Show that I think you should hear in that regard. We'll do that next here on The Score. A Built For Tough Bears Monday continues with McNeil and Parkins. They'll be on today. Are the Bulls on tonight? The board is completely empty. Ordinarily, we have everything like written out on the dry erase board in the studio. It's completely empty.
Yeah, they play tomorrow versus the Knicks.
So my guess is McNeil and Parkins, then Shep for 30 minutes, then Monday Night Football.
Yeah. I'll assume that'd be the right way to go about it.
Sure. I mean, you know, whatever it takes. I'll talk to them about it momentarily. They'll be in here. They'll join me around 150-ish. So while we're talking about the Bears, and we've gone through a lot of good stuff, big thanks to Anthony Heron, who's a really great contributor for us and does a great job of breaking stuff down. I love talking football with him. I also love talking with my guys on Sunday. We have a good time. And let me just tell you, there's so much that I wish I could tell you about the stuff that you don't see. But I will tell you that.
Like peanut coming off?
Well, that people actually saw that yesterday. So we do this thing called the sidecast, which is basically towards the end of halftime. If you go to NBC Sports Chicago's Facebook page, you can watch us watching the game. It's like Mystery Science Theater 3000. And we're like commenting on stuff. So make us your second screen. And yesterday, there was a play, because we go into the third quarter a little bit. There was a play where Leonard Floyd just completely, and Charles Tillman then FaceTimes Alex Brown. And as soon as Alex like opens it up, Charles is like, what the f*** is he doing? And Alex is like, we're broadcasting right now. And he's like, no, you're not. He's like, yeah, we are. Because we were on the stream on the Facebook page. It's really funny. Like, It's in my Twitter feed. I retweeted it. But just watching football with those guys is incredible. And I knew a lot of Olin stories from covering the team and sometimes being a central character in an Olin story. I had no idea of all of the great Olin stories that I was going to be witness to now. And it's hilarious. Hilarious. Anyway. Yesterday, one of the things that we got into a conversation about, and I was glad to have like Matt Forte kind of step up and lead this part of the discussion, is I asked a question about how the Bears win games and how it feels like sometimes I'm watching a team that wants to win, but wants to win a specific way. And they seem sometimes unwilling to just figure out a way to win that week. Here's what Matt and Olin and the boys said about that.
Yeah, like last week we talked about offensive coordinators, and I was talking about how many I've had in my career, and everybody has their own style, and they like to run plays a certain way. Even if it's been working, they'll revert to their old ways. And so you see that a lot in this game and in games in the past too. And I'm not sure, you know, when he's going to come around and, you know, figure that out. But even with the run game today, it seems like whenever they line up in the eye and they have the fullback lined up offset, they only run to that weak side. And I haven't really seen any strong side runs to the opposite side. So I don't like. Has he built anything else off of that package with within the eye?
Well, what play was that today, where they got the ball, and immediately I think they scored on. I think it was after Kwiatkowski's turnover. It might have been, and they ran like a double reverse. Yeah. Or something, mm-hmm. Right. Instead of just
first down.
First down. It was like a double reverse first. A first or second, third and one in the game. We're in five wides. Bobby Massey jumps off sides. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, Lawrence, like you go back to their first touchdown of the year this year. It was in late in the third quarter, actually against Denver, which is the first sign of rate that maybe our offense ain't going to be very good this year. Mm-hmm. And it's a nine-play drive. Eight of the plays are runs. That tells me right there what's your identity. It's not that the Bears offense doesn't have an identity. It's that they don't want to be what their identity is.
Yeah.
They have an identity, right? They have a way they move the ball. They have a way they score. Mm-hmm. It's just no one turns the film on and says, well, let's go to our very few touchdown drives this year, mm-hmm. and let's see what were we actually doing on that drive. And the only drive, guys, that they were actually who Nagy wants to be was the second touchdown drive of the Philadelphia Eagles game last week, right? Mm-hmm. And how did they start that drive? They threw up I formation boot to Allen Robinson. Mm-hmm. He dropped it over the guy. He went to jump over the guy's head, and he dropped it, but Allen Robinson went for it. But that guy kind of Mitch in his groove, right? You get mm-hmm. him into a boot, yep. you let him mm-hmm. throw the ball out, and then they run. Then they start with their will and their zone read, and that's what they want to be. But that was really the only successes they've ever had in that style of offense until today.
I wonder if you caught Matt Nagy in an honest moment, whether he'd say, winning is important, but I've got something to prove. And I know that might not seem entirely fair. It's just a sense that I get while I'm watching the game. And I'm glad that it was validated by guys who know better than I do. But when you're watching it, it's like he really is just like, we have to do it this way. When you see them after having successful plays out of the I formation, scampering to going back into shotgun, and then those plays failing, it's like he wants his offense to work so badly that he's less willing to allow for other ways for the offense to score points. It just feels that way watching it to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that assessment. It's the best coaches, in my opinion, across all sports adjust to what they have. And I feel like Andy Reid has done a really good job with that. Bill Belichick is obviously, the best at it.
But John Harbaugh over the last 2 years.
He's done a very good job with that. It's just
Kyle Shanahan, look, Mike Tomlin.
Right. If you want to be, the wins are all that matter. Like, how you win doesn't really matter. Everybody respects the wins that you get, not necessarily how it looks.
Just seems that way to me. So something that we talked about a little bit yesterday, and it was an enjoyable conversation to say the least. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. On Veterans Day and every day, the Chicago Wolves are thankful for all the veterans and active duty military who've dedicated themselves to our country's well-being. It was our honor to welcome so many veterans to Allstate Arena Saturday and Sunday for Military Appreciation Weekend. And this segment is being brought to you by Nutrisystem for Men. See how simple losing weight can be with Nutrisystem. The meals come to your door, you eat the food and lose the weight. Order at Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see the website for details. We are going to give away a Chicago football t-shirt. But you have to be listening to the next segment to get it. Back after this on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.